In the last 10 years, our field has gone from an unknown specialty to a household name. This brings unprecedented opportunities, but we need to rise up to meet them and give our patients the care that they deserve. In order to help others get better, we need to be better. This podcast will help you to become more confident with your patients, more successful in your practice or business, and a leader in pelvic health. And we're going to have some fun along the way. Join us as we rise together. We're Jesse and Nicole Cozine, founders of Pelvic Sanity Physical Therapy and the creators of the Pelvic PT Huddle. And this is Pelvic PT Rising.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Pelvic PT Rising podcast with Jesse and Nicole Cozine. Hey Nicole.
Hello.
April. We are in April. A full quarter of this year is done. Nicole, it's Rising Retreat Week. Like, spring has sprung. I am feeling good.
Yeah, this is exciting. So many of you know that a few weeks ago, we had our folks out that were in the CEO boardroom, part of our Rising Mentorship Group. They were out in San Clemente for a business retreat. And now we have the folks that are in our mentorship program coming out. We have a coach coming out for that as well. We're really excited about it. And we're just so stoked. It's always so good to be in the room with these folks. And a lot of us are going to meet each other for the first time. And we're just really, really excited to change some lives.
Yes, it's so much fun. We absolutely love doing that and seeing everybody there. You're right, Nicole. There is just a power about being in the room and being in a group of people who are all doing the same thing, who have this dream of changing the way we are doing pelvic health. And it is fun to be a part of. So we can't wait for that this week. We also have some exciting announcements. You've been noodling this for a long time, Nicole, but we have a vagus nerve treatment masterclass on the way from you.
Yes, I'm super excited for this. I think it's going to be a really great next step from the down training masterclass that I did that so many of you have taken and loved. Yeah, I'm just really excited to share what we actually do for the vagus nerve stuff at Pelvic Sanity.
Yeah, it gets super practical, right? Because I think that that's one of your frustrations. I feel like what motivates you is when you see a lot of confusion around a topic or people who are kind of talking past each other and you're like, did you look at the vagus nerve? And they're like, yes. And you're like, but no one knows what the hell that means.
Right, totally. And then, yeah, then that starts my little brain going. And then inevitably, my brain always starts to go to when we are training staff members at Pelvic Sanity. And we had two recently come on earlier this year. And when we got to the section on treating the nervous system in the onboarding process at Pelvic Sanity, I was just like, this is fucking gold. Like, this is it.
And they were mind blown too. This wasn't something that they had had. I mean, they had all taken introductory pelvic health courses. They had done pelvic health rotations in some cases.
Yeah. And then they're fresh out of school. Like, no one teaches this. So if you don't get it in school and then you don't get it in any other continuing education program, or again, people are just sort of brushing through that, then yeah, it's a problem. And I think it's worth getting specific on because it's one of the most powerful tools that you can have in your toolbox as a pelvic rehab provider.
Awesome. So there's going to be more information coming out about that, including a specific date. But if you want to get on the wait list for that and be among the first to get all that information, go to pelvicptrising.com/Vegas, V-A-G-U-S. I always want to say Vegas, baby.
Yeah. Jesse always thinks that we have to like spell it. Although all of us know that we, even when we're going to Las Vegas, we spell it V-A-G-U-S. So
right.
Don't worry.
I don't need to spell it. Okay.
Okay. Don't spell it, Jesse.
I feel like I'm so proud that I know that. It's just like this, you know, like, I
good
don't know.
Good job.
Yes.
Yay.
I do need lots of words of affirmation, guys.
Yes. Just so annoying to someone who does not like giving words of affirmation. Insight into the Cozine marriage, people.
Yes, indeed. So talking today, Nicole, the title is that down training is about more than breathing. And I really wanted to almost take a little bit of a step back. Like, where does this kind of, it is as much of a treatment philosophy as anything else. Like, where does this come from? Because I know you've treated this way for a long time before this was a buzzword. We're talking about vagus nerve stuff and thinking about more than breathing for down training. That was part of the whole down training masterclass. We'll put a link to the show notes if you guys haven't been through that. But talk to me about this like idea, Nicole. What's the germination of this?
I'm really grateful to have been influenced by a really excellent few clinicians in early in my career. And one of those people was a professor I had in our orthopedic series, and his name is Dr. Steve Fertig, and he taught at Chapman for many, many years and now teaches at a different school in Montana. But I keep in contact with him decently, and he has always been in my brain because he used to walk around our ortho lab in PT school and just say little snippets of stuff. And one thing that always stuck with me was he always used to say, give your patient the ability to do what you're asking them to do. That's always stuck with me, and combine that with my nerdy brain with anatomy, and anatomy is evidence, and anatomy and physiology. We have so many tools as a rehab provider, as a PT, as an OT, to like really get and influence the system that we're working on in ways that no other provider can. But we can't just brush over stuff or tell our patients to do stuff. If they don't have the ability to do what we're asking them to do, then we're doing them a huge disservice. And so I'll give you an analogy that I think we can all resonate with. So if somebody, you're assessing someone's gait and they're walking down a long hallway and you see that they have some dysfunctional gait patterns going on, and then maybe one of the biggest things that you see is that they're having a shortened stride length on one side. It is doing your patient a disservice to just say, take a bigger step, right? You can't observe a dysfunction and observe a pattern in somebody and then just tell them to do the opposite thing and think that that is good treatment or good advice or an assessment or anything that is worthy of praise. Because at the end of the day, it's our freaking job to make sure, to use Steve's words again, to give our patients the ability to do what we're asking them to do. So in the case of the shortened stride length on one side, if we're going to try to lengthen that stride length, we have to first assess what is the impact of that shortened stride length on one side? Why might they be doing that? What are all the hypotheses that that might be going on? And then if we decide that we actually do want to achieve that goal, then we have to make sure that they have, for instance, the dorsiflexion range of motion, the great toe extension, the glute strength, the calf strength, the hip flexor length, all of the things, the pelvic rotation range of motion, to be able to do what we're asking them to do in lengthening that stride. I really believe that to my core. And when you start to think about things that way, does my patient have the ability to do what I'm asking him to do, then it allows us to intervene in ways that we know how to do. And this goes back to another breathing analogy as well. If your patient has a paradoxical breathing pattern or dysfunctional breathing, you can't just say breathe more or breathe deeper. Like, they don't get it. They can't do it either. Like, physiologically, they can't do it. They might not be able to anatomically not do it with their ability to expand their rib cage or do diaphragm excursion. Like, we have to assess the ability for them to be able to take that deep breath. And if we're not doing that, we're doing our patients a huge disservice. And so this is also what I feel like when we talk about the vagus nerve. We can't just say, oh, we need to downregulate the nervous system. And if you might think you're doing a great job by saying like, oh, well, I'm doing, quote, vagus nerve activation techniques. And it's like, right, but what is that? Normally, we just go back to breathing. And so even if that's all you do is breathing, we have to do more than just breathing to activate the nervous system, the parasympathetic nervous system. But the reality is that there are so many more interventions that we can do from the parasympathetic perspective and make sure that your patient actually physically has the capability to do what we're asking them to do, which is activate that nervous system. And if they haven't been doing that well because their sympathetic nervous system has been overactive in a way that they aren't aware of, can't control all the things, like, we need to be able to intervene in a way that the body system at its core is going to be able to make sense of our intervention. And we can't do that by just telling somebody to calm down or just breathe or, quote, implement stress management techniques and have that be affecting your vagus nerve. It just doesn't work that way.
So I think as we take a tiny step back, Nicole, going back to the downtraining masterclass that you did, this was actually the first time that anybody had truly even given a real definition of what downtraining is. You called it any intervention designed to reduce tension in the pelvic floor and or central nervous system. And then you further classified it into three different types: nervous system, pelvic floor direct, and pelvic floor indirect downtraining. And so when you're saying, like, hey, breathing has become the trendy go-to nervous system regulating aspect, you're not saying that that's bad or that we shouldn't be doing that. It's a both and. That can't be the only thing, though.
Yeah, and I'm not even saying it's wrong. I mean, we all know that breathing is life. It's so important for our pelvic floor pressure management system. I mean, I could go on for days about how important breathing is. But we can't act like that's the only thing or that it's enough to truly affect somebody's nervous system.
You know, this is so cool, actually, looking back at your downtraining masterclass. We aren't even really talking about this, but if you haven't done the downtraining masterclass, you need to do it before the vagus nerve thing. It's not a prerequisite, but, like, goodness gracious, it's $47 is incredible. As you were going back through it, I had to stop you from reading it.
I know. It's like, this is really good.
Right? But you gave, in that nervous system calming category, you gave 15 examples of things that you could be doing.
Of which breathing is one.
Right. And so that's where it's talking about broadening out that idea of, you know, downtraining is more than just breathing. I will also say, and maybe this is a weird thing about me, Nicole, but it has always rubbed me a little bit the wrong way. As a patient, I feel like sometimes when you're talking about breathing so much, and you guys are so excited about this, I feel like there's a little bit of downside there. Like, when you assign that to me to go home and, like, breathe better, if I don't really get it, it can kind of feel some kind of way about, just giving you guys an example, I had a bout of gastritis, is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm.
That was rough. Don't recommend 100%. Right. But if I had gone into the physician's office and said, hey, I've got this, like, constant burning in my gut, and he had said, hey, you need to go home and breathe deeply, I would have not left that place very happy. And I wouldn't have, a family member had asked me, like, hey, what are you supposed to be doing for that? And I had to say, well, he gave me some breathing exercises and told me to come back next week. That might not have been, it certainly wasn't my expectation, what I was looking for going in. And that might have been totally right. It probably would have helped me calm the hell down and not freak out about it. But was that really what I was looking for? If that was all that we had done, I would have left unhappy.
Yeah, when I think, to your point, I mean, that was an actual organ-based problem. But I feel like even in a musculoskeletal-based problem.
Well, I've had this with ortho PTs, too. I'm talking about somebody for my traps, and they give me breathing exercises. It's like, fucking work on my shoulders, lady. Like, yeah. What are you doing?
Well, I think to Jesse's point, I feel like we don't understand how much, or we forget actually sometimes how much patients don't know about our pelvic floor diagnoses, pelvic floor mechanisms of why something hurts, about pain, about why breathing is so important. And so when we, I guess the point being is that when we reduce something to be so simple that they're already doing it because they're alive, so that breathing is not a problem for them from their perspective. And then we basically pathologize it to them and then give it back to them as an exercise. It's like, right. So, but how is that actually working? And it can feel very dismissive, right? And then you also have to think about, like, what happens when they go home and someone asks them, oh, what'd you do in therapy today? Oh, well, she said, like, I need to work on my breathing more. I'm breathing wrong. And it's like, well, could you be breathing more optimally? Sure. But is that really the take-home message that we want people to come home with? And sometimes, yes, and I do think breathing is important. But also, I do feel like I need to just say, I see you're breathing. And also, I raise you a much more targeted, specific, and meaningful intervention to folks that they can't do themselves at home. And that's what I feel like vagus nerve interventions can be for some folks. And I think it's a really great way into the nervous system. And to go back to what Steve Furtick said was that you're giving the patient ability to do what you're asking them to do. So if we want the parasympathetic nervous system to be more turned on, or that volume knob turned up, and the sympathetic nervous system volume knob turned down, then we have to physically give them the ability to do that. And we can, and this is what most people don't realize, or if we do, we don't know how to actually implement that. We do have direct vagus nerve interventions that we can do. And it's really awesome. And it involves external treatment, and we involves like looking outside the pelvis and all the things that we say that we love. So why aren't we doing this more? And that's what this course is going to be.
I am really excited about that. And, you know, that was cool. Nicole, looking back at those list of interventions and ideas that you had for nervous system downregulation, of those 15 things, the vast majority, almost all of them, were things that the patient can do on their own that do involve behavior change or take time to implement. Like, this is a powerful tool because it's something that you can do in the office to affect change. Whereas most of the other things are more like long-lasting global behavior change type things.
Yeah. And so I do think if we have that smorgasbord of things that we can choose from, and I do believe that every single one of those things on that list in the downtraining masterclass is super important. And also it's important that we have tools that we can directly help our patients with in office that are going to be helpful and make those other strategies that we're going to help them to do, the more global ones, the more behavior change ones, the more things that we know are going to have a long shelf life in their own life on being able to change the way that their nervous system is responding to things. I feel like that is important. And also we need to make sure that we have some direct techniques too that make people feel like, first of all, that actually work, and then also make people feel like we're able to do something. So it's not so simple as, oh, just breathe more or breathe better, right? When they don't even realize that they're breathing dysfunctionally in the first place, but that we're actually having an intervention that directly affects that breathing, that directly affects the nervous system that we're trying to get more out of.
So what percentage of your patients, Nicole, do you do vagus nerve stuff with? Are we talking like 10% or like 90%? Give me like a general, like how of all of your patients, if we look and did a retrospective chart analysis, might not even be in there. I don't know, with your documentation stuff, we'll talk about that. But where are we at here?
I mean, basically anybody that has an overactive pelvic floor, tension, tight pelvic floor, which in my opinion is really the vast majority of people, even for people which you typically would think of as a pelvic floor muscle problem, right? Like stress incontinence or prolapse. I mean, a lot of times these folks actually underneath it all have an overactive pelvic floor. Anybody that has an overactive pelvic floor needs to at least be assessed for this intervention.
Okay. So, I mean, you're talking the majority of people in your, like, this is a technique that you would be using on the majority of people at some point in their plan of care.
Yes, at some point in their plan of care. I would say 100% of anybody with any chronic pelvic pain problem.
Okay. So just, I mean, that's like every person, chronic pelvic pain, you're just like, this is going to be happening at some point. Now you prioritize it. I'm sure you're going to talk about that in the masterclass, like how to prioritize it and stuff like that, but it's happening.
Yes. To your point, Jesse, and this is where your non-clinician brain goes like, actually, it's good that you're asking me this because I feel like in a chronic pelvic pain situation, we're talking about interstitial cystitis, vulvodynia, chronic prostatitis, like any pain, endo, anything that you've been in pain for a long time. You have to understand that that is that many reps of the sympathetic nervous system being in overdrive. And so the vagus nerve stuff isn't even something that I talk about, oh, let me implement this now for a short period of time. It's like literally part of my treatment session almost every single time in office. And it just depends on where I'm doing that, where I'm inserting that intervention, but it's pretty much every time. And so, right, because we need to give the parasympathetic nervous system inputs to turn on and turn up way more than any sympathetic nervous system. The patient's already doing the sympathetic nervous system part, so we got to turn that down and then turn the volume on up. And it's not as easy as just turning down the sympathetic nervous system stuff. And that's where I feel like there's a big toggling on and off of different things. And so the vagus nerve interventions are a way to turn the volume knob up on the parasympathetic nervous system. The rest, relax, digest, procreate, all the things, right? And so, but the way that we do that in every single session can be just make all of your other interventions like so much more effective. So,
right.
So if you're going to do pelvic floor work, most of the time you can do some vagus nerve stuff first to set your patient up for success with your internal manual techniques. It's game changer if you think about it in this way differently.
Right. And I love that it's not just once. Like, oh, I did their vagus nerve. Check.
Yeah, which is why in the Facebook groups, I get so frustrated because it's like, oh, did you do vagus nerve interventions? And they're like, yes. I'm like, right. But like, did you really though? And did you really do it for the amount of time that you need to be doing it and the consistency in which they need it? Like, this is a chronic pelvic pain person. Like, we're already on an uphill battle with how much we can actually have inputs that are positive in that way when their sympathetic nervous system have been in overdrive for so long. But we've got to do it. And we've got to help patients to do it themselves. And we have to give them the ability to do what we're asking them to do. And so it can make breathing more effective. It can make literally everything else in that nervous system category more effective if we also are taking into consideration these direct techniques.
That's it, guys. We're going to be talking a lot about this. You can hear Nicole is so passionate about it. I know it's been a game changer at Pelvic Sanity. I can't wait for her to get to train all of the rest of you guys in that. Make sure to head over to pelvicptrising.com/Vegas in order to get on the wait list for that and get all the information as soon as it comes out. But we're going to have some really cool stuff coming out for you on that. So, as always, appreciate each and every one of you who are listening. We'd love to keep this conversation going.
And let's continue to rise.